Hello, hello, hello. This is Danny Bailey here from the Palace of the Dogs, and this is another episode of Barking. Whoop, 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 whoop. For those of you who don't know, we are the Palace of the Dogs. The Palace of the Dogs is a multidisciplinary arts collective seeking to redirect the purpose of art in our society, increasing progressive conversations around identity, politics, and social issues, whilst creating original works that document decolonial practices through arts and media. And we have two amazing guests today from Dope Black Queers. I'll introduce them in a moment, but we'll be talking about relationships and sexuality in the Black queer community. Let me just introduce you now. We have, let me tell you about Dope Black Queers first. Dope Black Queers is a community collective that sits at the intersections of Black, queer, and trans identity. They exist as a means to create intentional space to celebrate, educate, heal, support, and inspire. And we have Aiden and Chloe Filani.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I'm glad that you're here, actually. Literally like shaking in the chair with excitement. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here. I'm on the back end of a cold, which is like lingering longer than colds usually for me.
Yeah.
I think it's a sign of like the seasons changing. But other than that, I'm good. Good. We're out of the sixth planet retrograde.
Oh.
Which had me in a grip. So yeah.
How was that? What was going on for you?
September was just the worst month of the year. And like nothing, I was finding it difficult to do work, like complete tasks. But I feel like literally like things have lifted and like it's easier and I can just sit down and bang out work for 2 hours and then procrastinate for, but the 2 hours has been done. But yeah.
And like, tell us about yourself, other than what the work that you do with Dope Black Queers, which we will get into. What else do you get up to?
So I'm a freelancer. So I make up jobs and claim it to be a responsibility.
That's right. That's decolonial practices. There you go. You know? That's right. That's what we need.
But like, events management is the bulk of what I do. So that includes Dope Black Queers, but then also on a freelance basis for other organizations. I'm currently managing an award ceremony for young people in care. So yeah, that's my main project at the moment. I used to DJ. I still can. Maybe I will at some point in the future.
You better. Yes. We're waiting.
There you go. the set's impending. We'll catch me in Boiler Room some point in the future.
Yay!
But yeah, so that's me. That's what I do.
Yay, I'm Chloe. How are ya?
I'm good. Good to be here. Tired. It's so funny, the retrograde thing. I'm like, I actually did work. I was actually like, okay. And then when everyone said it shifted, I feel mad now. I don't know. Maybe I'm an opposite to the retrograde period. I don't know. Maybe I need to figure out my star signs. About me, artist, poet, performance artist, workshop facilitator, sometimes public speaker, formerly known as a model, no longer that. Bitch has been aged out. but you know, still pretty, still looking cute. What else? What have you else got me to introduce?
Of myself? I don't know. I just wanted to know who you are. That's all. Well, I do know who you are.
Yeah, that's kind of...
It's so interesting, the retrograde thing, actually. Do you know what? I've just moved to South London. And the energy there is very thick, I feel, especially like with, there's such a, I grew up in East London, which is a very multicultural space, but where I'm living now is Black. Mm-hmm. And the energy and relationship with like the police and stuff is very, very heavy there. And so... Now living in this area, I have like this fear of leaving the house, actually. And that manifests in me, like I will like leave the house, leave and come back to the house like maybe 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. And it was only when I realized that I'm actually quite scared, like, for my life. Mm. And yeah, that feeling of, it's such a weird feeling of being in an area that is, that everyone looks like you, mm-hmm. but you don't feel like you have control or autonomy over like your actual life. And so that has kind of manifested in me like really just wanting to fight people. Mm-hmm. Like, just give me an excuse and we can go. Mm-hmm.
Is it the tension of like, not just the fact there's more policing in that area, but also just like Mandem and like aunties and like poverty, so people are like a lot more like feisty and like trying to get shit, or like
I think it might be also because it's like it makes like that culture like of like surviving so like acute, mm-hmm. and so potent that it's like damn, like even like walking my dog has been like I have almost took somebody's phone. Like I get loads of people take pictures of her like without asking. Mm-hmm. And I almost took somebody's phone and just like smashed it on the ground. But yeah, that's how I've been. Uh-huh. But I'm in a better place now.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that I'm on the other side. But yeah, who wants to tell me about dope black queers? A little bit more about that.
I mean, there's not much to add from your beautiful intro, but yeah, dope black queers, it's been around, it started some point in the pandemic. Mm. Started by Tali Kwaten. And then, yeah, through over time, some of us have come on board. We have a podcast, which is currently on hiatus indefinitely. But yeah, but there's podcast episodes for people to go listen to. And then we also run events at the moment once a month.
I went to one.
You did.
It was so good.
That was a really good one.
It was a cute one, yeah.
But yeah, so we do that. So yeah, Dope Black Queers is essentially just about trying to create space, hold space for community, black, queer and trans people to exist and be. And then also we can have conversations and discussions as an aside. But that's my intention in the kind of events that I throw with Dope Black Queers, is just a place for us to commune and be amongst each other.
And also to add, so I don't know if you know about this, but basically Tali actually asked me to be on Dope Black Dads. Mm-hmm. So that's like the beginning mm-hmm. foundation platform that like opened up.
Yeah.
Dope Black Queers with Tali. And I think that was 2020. And I was hesitant to be on that space, on the Instagram space and talking, because initially, yeah, I was not sure if the cishet black men in that space would have the capacity to not bring out their trans misogyny.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if they've even engaged with that.
Yeah. And,
so yeah, basically me and Tali just had this like really like deep conversation, because they went on the, I think, Instagram live feed or something like that with their father. And that went well. And so like, I think it sort of came from that, and I think the person's name is Marvin that runs.
Yeah, Marvin Harrison started Dope Black Dads. Yeah.
Marvin, I think, listened to what Tali said through me and like my concerns, and I think from that was like, oh yeah, let's like do this brunch. Yeah, and so that's like initially, essentially like.
The origin story.
I was like, yes, I ain't coming to Yoshi. Come give me my
I'm gonna make my own.
But no, I think it's actually like really interesting to be able to like have that sort of community dialogue across like black identities, ones that are more marginalized than others, and sort of see how we can like engage with each other. Like low key, I would also be down to like have a sort of like cross
family conversation,
yeah, because there's like dope black
mums, women, men, professionals,
isn't it? Disabled
and disabled, yeah,
yeah.
I think that's so important. Like, one of the the thing that we've been exploring as a group is this idea of like removing this idea of Black community and allowing for Black communities, mm-hmm. and thinking about how I used to be a Christian. We were talking about, I used to be a Christian.
Islam.
And one thing that I've always taken away from that experience is this idea of like a body, right? And how every component to this body, our body is important in making it function. So it's just understanding, like you said, having a space for ourselves, but also being in commune with others, which I think is really, really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Aiden, you've been doing like creating spaces like this for a while. Mm-hmm. How has it benefited you personally?
I would say like my biggest transformations and explorations of self have been through community spaces. Mm. Yeah, like queer and trans community spaces. It's where I've learned the most about myself. It's where I have seen the futures that I didn't know were going to become in me. I think I learn best through like examples and seeing. And I think that's what a lot of community spaces have been for me. I came across Chloe through Babes London, like a panel way back in 2017.
Mm. Ghetto time.
And yeah, that was just like a... Yeah, like, I don't know, it just... there's always that saying that, like, you know, queer kids are kind of like separated from themselves or parts of their identity for so long. Mm. And then it is, you start doing that development like later on into your 20s maybe, or sometimes later on in life. And community spaces were like the perfect hand-holding, like with a gentle rub on the back, like guide me through that. And yeah.
How about for you, Chloe?
In context of what, sorry?
I lost the train.
How have community spaces, queer community spaces, benefited you, or being a part of them or creating them?
Yeah, it allowed me to flourish more. Mm. I think I find them constantly growing and evolving and falling over and figuring themselves out. I think, yeah, similar to Aiden, it's like a space where you can like learn more about yourself and grow. And like, we live in a society that punishes queerness, demonizes queerness. Like, I think about like with me and my transness, my mother said to me when I was 3 years old, like, this is a memory that's like rigid in my head. She was like, oh, I'm going to have a baby girl now so you can stop being the girl. But oh, wow. I don't remember what things I was doing for her to now say that. Mm. If she's having to say that, I was giving it. She was like, you my daughter. And I was like, yeah. And then she was like, you ain't my daughter no more. And I was like, damn.
Oh, wow.
So, I think queer spaces, when you come from these, and I think also like our parents and these like our family backgrounds, they know what they're doing. They're stopping us from accessing that freedom of authenticity of who we are.
Yeah.
And queer spaces allow us to start tapping back into that. Mm-hmm. And also finding a safe space to tap back into that. Obviously there's the contention of what safe space is, but I think definitely safer than the like broader mainstream society.
I love that. So viewers, you might have heard the episode that came out before. This one is not going to be as X-rated as Vanessa's episode, because Mikian take it. Mikian, my heart can't take that. But I hope you enjoy this convo. We're going to give a big up to our show sponsor, who is Tahina. Tahina is a vegetarian, plant-based eatery inspired by flavors of North Africa and the Levant. The menu is designed and cooked by Saifuddin Abdel Salem, an Egyptian-born and raised chef. He believes in the importance of sustainable cooking and environmentally conscious eating, and is on a mission to provide a food offering that is big on flavor and kind to the planet. The restaurant is at the Yard Theatre in Hackney Wick. So if you're feeling for some good food, head over and quote the Palace of the Dogs at the bar to get a 10% discount. But before you do that, make sure you follow them on Instagram at Tahina London. That's Tahenaldn. That's a struggle for the opening hours. Yeah, so we're going to head into a little break before we get into the bulk of the chat. Aiden, give us a tune.
Okay, this is from, I think maybe my favorite album of the year, Sorry Beyonce.
Damn.
But PJ Morton's Watch the Sun. This is the song Be Like Water, which features Stevie Wonder and Nas. Yeah.
Lovely. All right, here we go.
I think by now you should know, things won't always go your way. Can't change things you can't control, so let those worries wash away. Just be like water, let it flow. Be like water, yeah. Just let go. Be like water.
And we are back. We're going to be in a conversation talking about relationships, sexuality and sensuality in the Black queer community with Aiden and Chloe. I want to start with something really cute, right? And talk about like beauty and sensuality. Mm-hmm. And let me know, when do you feel the most beautiful?
Why everybody gotta look at me?
The beauty is radiating.
Oh, shut up.
First Aiden. When do I feel most beautiful? After I've got out of the shower and I moisturize. Mm. I have like obsession, I don't know. But like the way that the skin, black skin, changes color where, like, when it's dry and then when it's like it radiates, it's like luminescent. And like I could spend a good chunk of time just like looking at myself in the mirror. Just moisturized, just like, wow. I don't say wow, but I'm just like, I'm just captivated by it.
Yeah.
I just really, so yeah, I think.
Do you know what's so funny? I was listening to something the other day. I was listening to Kelechi actually. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about how like, she clocked the fact that when she creams herself, she's actually beating herself.
I remember that.
That's you're using that harsh shaper. That, you know the raw shaper.
Yeah, you just gotta, like rabbit. You gotta clap yourself like hard. And she was like, "Oh, like that's supposed to be like a loving thing. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I now beating myself?"
I clocked myself in that one.
Yeah. So now I like really like take my time. Like my morning ritual is like, and my evening actually is a lot more about loving on myself. How about you?
I guess similar. I'm very like, as a black feminist, you know, I'm critical of beauty, especially in this patriarchy. But I think but in that, I'm very critical in the way that like white womanhood is more of a rejection of like, well, white feminism is like reject all beauty, but I'm like, no, adornment of ourselves, adornment, especially of black people from the ancient times of Africa, like adornment is really prominent and important. Our skin, as Aiden say, like you look dry, but not just dry. If you don't cream and you're always taking showers,
yeah,
your skin starts to like get ashy, then it starts to crack. Like our skin literally screams at us, take care of me, adorn me, make me shine, moisturize me, you know, and then to the other parts of beauty of like, you know, makeup and hair, and like these things make us feel good, make us feel ready for the world, ready to like start anew or even like change up if you're feeling a bit different, like, oh, I'm gonna have black hair, red hair, like, or I'm gonna give myself like eyeliner that's yellow and bright or glitter, like that really changes your vibe and energy. And I think like this society is like commodified so much of our beauty that we don't, it's like really hard to untangle that sort of like, is this for someone else's gaze? And I think that's like a definitely a conversation, but like try to embrace the part of it where you know you're making yourself feel good at the end of the day. And I think it's important to like register that when you're like adorning, beautifying yourself. And also I always feel beautiful when I see other black, specific dark-skinned black women like hyping themselves up. I saw someone on my Instagram the other day and she was just like, I'm so beautiful, God, look at my beautiful black skin, my beautiful wide nose, my big full lips. And I was like, shit, yeah. Like, you know, it's always good to be reminded about that, like black beauty.
Yeah, it's so interesting that we are talking about things that are quite sensual, but in the wider society has been sexualized. What are the differences for you in your sensuality and your sexuality? That's a huge question.
Yeah.
But I don't play. What are the differences for you? I think that's something that I myself even really struggle with. What is the difference between sensuality and sexuality, and how do I practice sensuality? So maybe an easier question is, how do you other than the ways that we've just said, how do you practice it?
I'm tempted to say I'm not good at practicing it, maybe, but maybe one thing, like movement. I feel sensual when I'm dancing or just listening to music and moving. It feels like a conversation with, like, between my body, my mind and my soul. Where they're all like, working in tandem, without thought. A natural response, and that feels to me like sensual.
On a day-to-day, I was talking to my therapist about this idea that in order for me to feel something, I have to do tasks beforehand, and then it's okay to feel something. But then actually that builds up so much tension, especially in the morning when I'm tidying the house or I'm washing dishes. I can look bloody mad, like angry doing that thing. So I guess in practicing sensuality in everything that I do is making everything an enjoyable experience, whether that be playing music or, you know what, I'm gonna use this soap when I use it because I like the smell. So like making the mundane feel good and not just something that I'm battering myself through.
Pleasure.
Absolutely.
I think with me, God, I'm always like black feminism. But Audre Lorde, black feminist woman warrior, she has a great essay about use of the erotic, and for me it really like has that conversation about the like black woman's, well, not woman's body, but black woman's body and eroticism. And so I guess for me it's like that practice of sensuality, of being like very in tune with like how my body moves and like also how I'm desired. And I think it's a double-edged sword because of the type of society we live in, where like to be quote-unquote a desirable gaze upon woman, you know, you're at risk of like the male violence and like male gaze in a very like aggressive and possibly harmful way. But then it's like, how do you also maintain, like, instead of rejecting it all, how do you maintain a space where you like still feel pleasure in that, feel good in that, but then like
also protect yourself in it as well. Yeah. And I think that's the difficulty, especially for like women, femmes and bodies that like are really desired and like seen by like sort of patriarchal men. Mm. So yeah, I think for me, it is that like balancing act of like moving with the like being desired, like even walking here, like, oh yeah, yeah, I feel good today. Mm. I'm being looked at like vibe. But then I'm like, I don't want to look at someone looking at me too much, because then I'm like, oh no, he's gonna feel like an invitation to come over, you know. So yeah, it's like a balancing act.
That's crazy. That's crazy, because it's just crazy when you actually deep the fact that you have to monitor something that is so innate in you. But obviously, but it's an obvious thing, but when you hear it in the way that you've said it, it really how do you, so what does that look for you at, what does that look like for you at home?
Oh, so I guess in isolation it's more similar to Ada, like dancing, like feel very
we should all dance.
We talked about like even beautifying, creaming, like the sort of sensuality of touching your skin. Like remembering like you know that your skin is like the most delicate and stuff to you. And you should take care of it. My brain is dead. Maybe like combing, go put my hands in my hair and sort of see myself in a mirror and like really like damn, you hot, like that's definitely like, yeah, a sort of sensual practice. And yeah.
So we've talked about the sensuality aspect. How do you look after your own sexuality?
I'm just gonna be real. Damn, shit is for this podcast.
I haven't had sex since last year. And I don't masturbate a lot. I don't know what one was going on, but I guess sexual, it kind of goes back more into the central for me. I think I'm more focused on me right now, but I'm not super into like, I think there's also kind of dealt with a lot of, can I say that F?
Yeah.
Fuck boys during the summer. And it kind of, it didn't caught me off guard, but it's more just like the place with fuckboys, they like, even if you know you're playing in that game with them of like, oh yeah, we're going to make out and like fuck around, but like nothing serious, nothing's going to be serious. And then they get booed up in the winter and you're like, with not me. And so for me, I guess, yeah, I've been sexual in that like playfulness with them, but I haven't pursued too much with them. And again, balancing act. But yeah, I guess, yeah, sexual is an interesting one. What about for you, Aiden?
What was the question again? How do I look after my sexuality? I was going to say I don't interact with it often, but I don't think that's an accurate statement. I'm big on me playtime. Like, that's always been the case, because I tend not to date, and I'm demi-romantic, demisexual and demi-romantic, but like on the asexual spectrum. So like I tend not to have like sexual attraction to people without a strong rooted like emotional connection. So exploring or looking after my sexuality in like communication with someone else isn't something that is ever present for me. So yeah, me playtime always happening, and if it isn't, then it's usually a sign of something I recognize like 2 weeks and I'm like, oh wait, what's happening here? But it's funny you say about the fuck boys thing. Like, I was in a thing for like maybe a year, and I still feel like I'm putting myself back together after that. Seems like a strong statement, like I'm not sure I'm going to give that person that much, but because it's not something in terms of with other people that I'm always doing, or I feel the need to do, or I have a history of doing a lot, I'm like, well, that was a year, and so I feel like I need 3 years to like figure out like how I want to interact, or share my sexuality with someone else.
Mm.
So I think I'm in that place of nothing / figuring it out. Yeah.
Mm. I think that because I have a partner, and I think that sometimes it's you can I have been in the habit in past relationships of only getting what I needed sexually from them. Like, you must please me.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely in this, oh my gosh, I'm really just speaking out of things, isn't it?
That's energy.
Yeah. Definitely in this relationship, it has been really important for myself and for the relationship to explore my own body and my own sexuality and learn, actually know what it is that I like.
Mm.
And be able to provide myself with that so that when I am in a relationship when I am engaging with my partner, then it is an experience of sharing and not just do it to me.
Yeah.
Ooh, child.
That's good. Do you know what? I would even add, this is not like the deepest sexual side, but I realized my sex drive kind of went up after going to Carnival.
Oh my gosh, Carnival was everything to me.
Because they were fun, ass, dark skin, man. Beautiful black king.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them, no one was a bit too handsy, which was good. And so it was really nice to like move my body and sort of have someone respond to moving my body. Got wind up on the lats.
That's right.
Kept control of lats.
Yes.
And that was like exciting. I was like, oh yeah, this is like the vibe. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, that was kind of like, that definitely boosted my sort of like sexual energy and vibe.
Yeah, it's so interesting because that I've not been in a space with that many black people in a long time. Mm. And so I forgot that my body's normal because
mm-hmm.
mm. we're on the receiving end of what the white beauty standards all the time, even within the black community mm-hmm. and black media, we're always on the receiving end of that. And being there, I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm normal. Like, my body's normal, and then that made me feel myself even yay. More. Yay! But I know that I spoke to a few black queer people who don't feel comfortable being in those spaces. Does anyone or at Carnival per se? Mm-hmm. Does anyone have any thoughts or on that?
Yeah, well, I guess it's, you know, the sad reality of like the tension of religion, blackness, history, Christianity, purity between like man and woman, cis normativity. So queerness is always deviant. The black body is always seen as immoral, so it has to perform a certain like respectable mm-hmm. thing, and respectable is straight, and so non-respectable that maintains its morality is queer. And so spaces like Carnival that are, you know, they are for us, but they're also a public event.
Mm.
They're also an event in which white people gaze upon us, and I think people are very aware of that.
Mm.
And so I think also the tension of like, sadly, a lot of like dancehall artists, reggae artists who have come to the UK and have been quite homophobic. And so I think that history has like stayed. And so a lot of black queer folks, when they think about a predominantly black Caribbean space, they think about a higher level of homophobia. Mm. And maybe from a lot of black spaces that are open across the board, from cis, het, queer, so on. And so I think that's the kind of contention that I know. I'm lucky because I'm a trans woman, but people don't perceive me when I'm like walking past them. Like, they see just a woman and they don't ID the transness. And so I'm able to access going to a space like Carnival. Like, you know, yeah, I had fun, but all the mandem that danced with me didn't know I was trans. If they did, it might have been different. And so that's that sort of also double-edged balancing act I sort of deal with. And personally, I don't divulge to a guy that I'm winding up with. I will not tell him I'm trans, like, on this, like, I'm not trying to do, have him like do existential crisis in the we had a good time. You had a good time with a girl. That's all you need to know, you know, keep it pushing. And I think that's like queerness in these spaces. I think it's also like how someone's queer body is read, you know. Some queer bodies aren't always going to be read as actively queer or feel in contention with these cishet people that feel like, I think also the homophobia comes out from them with trying to maintain this normality of blackness, the homogeny of blackness, that is like, there is a man and there's a woman and we make babies. Like, that is their maintained idea of like life. And so people that come outside of that, it's almost like, no, you can't be doing different type of black. You need to conform to this type of black. I'm going to fight you, all this other bullshit. And I think that's like, sadly, why places like Carnival are not super feel that welcoming. But I did see quite a lot of quite openly queer folks there as well, which was good.
It felt really good.
And I do hope they had a safe time going in and out. But yeah.
And then for me, yeah, like, I've only been to Notting Hill Carnival a few times, and the last time I went, I wouldn't say I was like a noticeably queer, whatever that means, but like, I don't think people were IDing me as such, but this time I was. And I had a great experience. I had a lot of people, not a lot, but like a handful of people, like, just stopped me and just be like, hey, I love the way you look. Like, in a way that I, because I haven't been in like as a bigger crowd and place, black centric or otherwise, I forgot the novelty of someone being like, oh my gosh, I like your hair. I'm like, oh, thank you. You can see me?
Yeah.
That kind of, but yeah, no, it was a great experience. And from other queer people that I know, I felt like it was a different experience this year than maybe previous.
I think things are definitely changing.
Yeah.
Slowly, but I think they're changing.
Oh, I love it. I had such a good time, man.
I know you did.
I was, oh. And you know, I went to work. So I went to a fete from 3 a.m. till 5. Then because the fete was in North London, then we went to Juve at 6 a.m. Wow. And then we left at 10. Then I went to work to go do two shows. And then I was not playing.
You're the person I aspire to be.
Oh my God. Wait, what?
I was not playing. Huh? Yeah, I did both days. And that Monday, I was on a float. Me and my sister were there from 12 o'clock to the end.
I'm screaming.
That's what I needed.
Yeah.
I needed it also because I know that on the outside it looks like a sexual movement, but actually there's so much energy is being released there, and I was just like, oh, like I need like this vibration.
Yeah.
Like when I went Carnival this year, I went with this like specific goal of I need to be behind the truck and I want to hear soca and I just want to dance. Like,
yeah.
It didn't even involve anyone else. It was just that, like, that very felt bodily experience that I wanted.
Yeah. I also, back to the sexual, like I didn't go there just for the mandem, but like I did go to dance, and obviously they came with they were like the second part of the appetizer, but like as you said, I think there's that like duality of it where it's like, yes, the dance is quite sensual and can be quite sexual, but I think also within the motion, the movement, the like gyrating of the bass and the music and your body is definitely releasing. It's definitely like this community gathering of energy and motion and spirit, like, absolutely.
Okay. I have a question. I saw this on Instagram the other day, and I thought it'd be a really fitting question, especially now that we're talking about Carnival. If you had a choice of living in a healthy queer community or a healthy black community, which one would you choose?
There isn't a healthy queer community without like blackness, and there isn't a healthy black community without queerness for me. Like, I'm not sure. I don't think I have a choice of the two. Like, one, my blackness has to be like whole, protected, safe, loved on in a queer community for it to be healthy, and vice versa of my queerness and transness in a black community.
Oh, she's a black community.
Because you're saying healthy. So I'm like, oh shit, we got rid of transphobia, homophobia. Yeah. Like, we're doing gender like expressions really freely. Okay. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
I just want to see black faces all day.
Yeah, yeah. Healthy queer. Okay, they're still white. And even if they're not racist, I'm like, man, your skin's so pasty.
Oh my gosh. That is so funny. Okay, on the back of that, what then takes up more importance slash precedence? Your gender or sexuality or your race?
In terms of what I have like the biggest contention with in my life at the moment, I would say that gender and sexuality is like taking the bulk of it at the moment. Like, that's my pressure points, if you will, or like the things that I'm working through the most. Like, I don't feel at contention with my blackness. Maybe it's because of, you know, I've spent years having the space to unpack that and understand it in a way that I haven't with queerness and with transness. And I'm now in that window of my life where this is the newer thing that I'm learning about myself. But yeah, like, and I'm spending a lot more time with my family, and my blackness isn't a problem there. But my gender and my sexuality is, I'm gonna say a problem, but it is a thing that everyone is learning on this journey together, that provides more problems for me. Yeah.
So was it race, gender, sexuality? I think for me, similar view when it comes to race, I'm like, yeah, I'm black y'all. Black y'all. I feel very content with that. I think, and with my blackness, my womanhood also kind of overlaps in that. So I'm very like content. Like, someone can misgender me and I'll be like, that's cute, because I know who I am. I've been living this life, being this person, understanding my history. Kind of, actually, say kind of my sexuality. Is kind of definitely, and I think it's because it's like sexuality, I guess, is engaged with others. And so it can't just be an isolated thing. And because being a black trans woman, and I date men, and so men who like women are mostly straight, and that's normally what I attract. I don't really get the cute, you know, pan bi guys who are like fun and, you know, interesting. I get, you know, your regular cishet nigga. You know, and
I hate that. Regular cishet nigga. You need to write a poem about that.
I have a lot.
And yeah, I think with that, there comes a lot of their own baggage, a lot of societal. And even if it's not their own baggage, it'll be societal stuff. Like, I've had guys literally be like, oh, I'm falling in love with you, but I wouldn't know how to explain to you, to my friends. And in the context of sexuality, it's like how we're in partnership sexually. Yeah, someone's fine. I guess sometimes they feel a bit of a way, but like a lot of the time they feel good with me. And I think it's just, yeah, it just makes a lot of things difficult, essentially, when it comes to dating and feeling. I guess it, for me, it then turns into like, do I want to stay in this space, but like, I constantly feel like I'm having to question my sexuality, my desires of men, because of the space in which it is such a, like, it has to deal with so much external bullshit. It can't just be like me and my partner, like me and my partner and this fucking world. But yeah, that's kind of it.
It's interesting for me because I think that my blackness is the common denominator, and the more I deconstruct things like my sexuality and my gender, the more it leads back to my blackness, mm-hmm. or the way that I present my blackness, or I explore my blackness. Like I feel sometimes, or I don't feel sometimes in maybe even presently, I have presented my blackness as an armor almost. And that means that I'm not necessarily engaging with it, but rather using it as a weapon to survive. Mm-hmm. So in now the process of me kind of like, the dog snoring, in the process of me like taking hold and actually finding softness in my blackness, what does the blackness mean to me? Then I'm like seeing, oh, well, you've got body issues because of this. You've got ideas about yourself because of this, that, and the other, because you have a toxic relationship with your gender and your sexuality because of this thing, because of your blackness. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what I have found is not necessarily to do with my blackness or my race, but how it is the relationship it has with whiteness.
Mm.
And I wanted to jump into this conversation because a lot of my personal experience, like early queer experience, were based in very like white queer spaces, which again really impacted my early relationships, my self-esteem, my body issues, and my sense of belonging to the wider community, thus creating a sense of like safety in like my closeness to whiteness, which is really gross to say, because
it's true,
I ain't there though. But again, that dichotomy of it, then it also being a very hostile environment as well. What were some of your experiences growing up in those kinds of spaces? White ones.
The palm colored.
I don't think I've spent much time in white queer spaces. I haven't got to the bottom of what this is about me, but like, if I just don't go to things if I see from like the distance that it may not include me. Mm. And that's language I have now to describe it, but I don't know what it was as a kid that was just like, no, I'm good. Mm. You can stay over there. Mm. And it meant like I didn't interact with and unpack and like my sexuality as much growing up. Like I always knew that I was queer. Again, not that I had the language like that, but I always knew I was queer from as young as I can remember. But I was just like, okay, I am cool, whatever. You know, deal with the family community side of it in the way that I need to like survive. But I wasn't going out to explore it. And the spaces that would have been available to me were white queer ones. And even when I started going to university, I moved to London. Like what I knew of were like, if we're talking about like clubs, it was like the GAYs and the Heavens.
Mm.
And I had people like in halls that'd be like, oh, we're going, do you want to come? And I'm like, no. Like I just, for whatever reason, like purely down to like the music they're going to play, I just don't want to go. I'm pretty fine where I'm at. And it was only until I found the spaces where I could say, oh, this one looks like me, or these people like speak to me, that I then entered them. So I didn't have that, I haven't spent that much time in white queer spaces. And then once I found the black ones and the sometimes the broader like POC ones, I was like, okay, well, I'm good. I don't need any of the other shit.
Yeah, don't like heaven. No shade to anyone.
Oh, definitely shades.
Have fun.
I think with me, it's got two aspects to it. It's like, I didn't really acknowledge myself as black. And I wasn't in that acknowledging my like transness and womanhood. And so white queer spaces, I think coming from the East London and like going to uni, also went to uni in South,
I still end up going back to East London for like the queer nights.
Mm.
And it was very like, yeah, it was very violent. It was very, I always found that like my body was always sexual. My body was always like, I remember I didn't, TBH, I didn't first have sex until I was like 21. So when I was going out to these spaces, all these men would always think like, I was always already engaging mm-hmm. with being sexual. I remember like all the first experiences I had with certain people, they would always be like, oh, you've definitely done this before. Oh, you've wow. definitely done this before, because it was like, they couldn't imagine like my body almost as innocent or like naive or coming to this as new. It's almost mm-hmm. like a black body is obviously mm-hmm. like ready for sex, mm-hmm. is prepared, is good at sex, has had it before. Like your body, you're dirty, you know how to have sex. And I think that sort of Oof. Gave me, yeah. That gave me this like, almost like pull back from being very sexual. Like I kind of like, basically didn't engage a lot. And then when I stepped into my transness, I actually did end up engaging more into sex, sadly with a lot of white guys. And it was also quite, like difficult because like, people don't always understand this, but like with trans women, because you haven't really had this like girlhood or no one's really supporting you as you're growing to your womanhood, you feel like you need to have this affirmation from like men mm-hmm. and so you sort of reach out to the guy who wants you the quickest, and that's a lot of like sexual experiences. And yeah, these white men will come with all of these like really sort of like fetishizey, racialized ways of seeing your body and like making you feel like this sex object. And you, the more you almost like find affirmation in them, the more you perform sex doll, sex girl, mm. sex transsexual, like for them, and stop like really exuding yourself. Like I know if I was like only in those spaces still, or only fucking like those type of white men, I would have got like, and no shade to people that get their body done, but like, I would have got everything done to be this like pornographic black trans woman.
Mm.
But luckily I had really supportive friends and I was moving away from their spaces, and even me just exclusively dating black men now. Black men do come with a lot of baggage, but there isn't as much like, essentially they don't have as much control over how I navigate and move through the world and like my own like reality of the world. Which is so crazy to say. But yeah, white men have this really weird way of like really consuming you in a way that you stop being yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I could tell you some stories. Mm. But I won't. you said that black men come with a lot of baggage. What does that mean?
Well, you know how y'all niggas are. Like, bro, like, bitches ain't just out here calling. No, on a real. I do think, like, I have a lot of grace for black men. I've been researching a lot, especially, like, what it means to, like, grow up as a boy. Like, yes, black trans women, but I really didn't really have much of a boyhood. And so when I talk to black men and I've engaged more with them, there's so much, like, they've been battered to be masculine or to perform boyness, or to even step up to a role that they've never asked to be stepped up to, or even learning like certain like hood niggas, like even when they want to be soft, there's people on road that's going to fight them. And I'm like, oh shit, well, I can't just be always asking you to cry. But I think they still should try to access those soft and vulnerable spaces. Yeah. But like, I think there is, I'm giving you our last space, but I do think the way black women have an experience of black gendered sort of oppression, I actually think black men have a certain specific black gendered oppression.
Oh yeah. But I've learned this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking to some people. Yeah.
And in a way that like sort of, yes, black women are like hypersexualized and stuff, but like no one really engages how black men are hypersexualized. Like black women are hypersexualized in a very, like, we kind of know it, the sort of like, you know, adultification, rape and sexual assault, but like no one really sees or like considers or even like wants to talk about that when it happens to black boys. Like that happens to black boys just as it, maybe not just as much, but it does happen on a large scale that, yeah, it shouldn't happen at all to either, but we should be talking about it, but it's always either taken as a joke or not taken seriously. Like I know I've even had a partner that told me he had a white foster family, and when he was a young black boy, the white mother assaulted him. And like, I remember him sharing that, and that sort of like vulnerability, like, I know I was probably like the only person he's ever told that to, because like I gave that space to like for him to share. But like, I think because as well, the society that doesn't give, like, gender is such an interesting thing because race intersects with it so much. Because black men are black, they're not really given the space to have essentially the power of white men, which I don't think they should access that. That power is actually really evil and dark. But there's also this thing where they want to be seen as men still. And it gets removed so much because of the racism and the racializedness of being black. But so they perform this hyper-masculinity, and that hyper-masculinity then affects loads of people who are black women, black queer folks, and attacks us for them to be able to take up space within this system of cis, white, patriarchal, you know, power structures. And I think that's where my contention with black men come, because it's like, y'all could have so much better. And I get why it's hard to try see the benefits of like learning black feminism or being softer or being more vulnerable. And you can still be a man and you can still be strong, but also have more consideration for others, have more respect, have more love for your other fellow people in the black community, and give space for them just as much as you give your space to your boys. And stop like trying to see each other as predators or like straight or aggressors. Like, deal with your own anti-blackness. Like, people don't realize that we live in an anti-black society. We all have that, and these black men are dealing with that themselves for their black brothers, for their like black sisters, black queer folks. And I could ramble a lot, but yeah, I'll stop there. But yeah, I think black men, I want them to do better, because I love on them. I know, like, beyond like my brothers and black men just out in the world, like, I want us to have a black community where there's not this tension consistently. There's not all this like intercommunal violence that is undealt with. Like, I want it to get dealt with, because how are we going to progress to even fight white supremacy when we've got so many intercommunal problems that we need to like contend with?
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was saying, like, I learned massively like this year, like the particular gendered kind of racial oppression that black men live under. Because I was speaking to one, I had a conversation with Marvin Harrison, who we talk about Dope Black Dads. And then I, not long after, had a conversation with my cousin, who's like, I don't know, 25. And what stood out for me was like the level of submissiveness, but like forced submissiveness that black men are doing to like align with white masculinity. Of like in a conversation with both of them, but my cousin in particular, like, he was pointing out all the things that are like horrible at work and that he's struggling with and that are like fundamentally like damaging to him. And I was like, okay, but why don't you do something different? And he's like, well, I just can't, because that's not what I'm meant to do. To fulfill the prophecy of like man and masculinity, I just need to submit to its pressure and its violence. I was like, but do you think that that will like lead to like a brilliant end goal? And he's like, no, I just don't know how to do anything different. I feel like I don't know.
Okay. But in that, that's why they need like black feminism, black queer folks, because we were able to see the different, what we could do different, how we could be different and be more of a true self.
And it's like what you said, like those that exist out of the cis heteronormativity, the deviants, or the people who have, yeah, who would be looked upon as such, like, we have consistently chosen to ignore the rule, the instruction, because we're honoring ourselves. And like, I think I'm more programmed to just be like, okay, well, that, I know that's what I'm meant to do, but it doesn't feel right, so I'm not going to.
Whereas
when I was speaking to my cousin, he was like, I know it doesn't feel right, but I don't know how not to say no. Like, I have to do it because I've never not chosen that. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Preach.
And so in building and creating our own queer communities and and spaces like Dope Black Queers, what have been some of the difficulties there in those spaces?
I'll go first.
Okay. So,
I think one of the difficulties is, we kind of talked about this earlier, like healthy black spaces. Dope Black Queers, I won't say it's like, yes, we're the safest, healthy, but we are creating a healthy black queer space.
Mm.
And so there's black people that, black queer folks that come into it, and they've come from all, you know, I'll talk about, coming from all this like trauma of being in these like very heteronormative white supremacists, and you know, their best friends are all white, and they probably are loving friends, but have come out with all these violent things that, and now they come into this black queer space that is just like loving and caring and lets them speak all of their truths. And then sometimes a lot of their truths, their trauma comes out, and then the tension comes out, and now they're attacking the space. And it's like, the space isn't trying to attack you, but because you have now this healthy space where you're like, oh wow, I'm a full person. I don't need to quiet my voice. I don't need to like not play this music when I'm out with this crowd. I can like talk about all of the fullness of myself in this space. Oh my God, no, this doesn't feel right. It's almost like some people get so used to being in a space of like a traumatized body that to now be in a space where you can let go of that is like, oh no, I'm going to attack. I need to get out. I need to let you all know this ain't safe because I don't feel safe, but it's because I do feel safe that I'm kind of running back into this like old framework of being. And I think, yeah, that's one of, we had to deal with a certain person, and it wasn't even deal with, but we tried to hold space for this person to express themselves and like figure out their feelings about certain things. I think you were at the... Was Danny?
Yeah. Was I there?
Do you remember there was a person who was talking about like how we're talking about white people?
Oh, yeah.
That's that energy.
Oh, yeah.
That's that energy. And
it's really bad because I sometimes I just switch off when... I think I she kept like coming and I was just like...
But that's it. She kept coming because it was like... She was able to be full.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to, she couldn't deal with
it. It was very much like, we're not allowed to talk about, we're not allowed to say this. And it was that kind of reaction to that. So yeah, no, that is, yeah. It's navigating the holding of space and then how people react to that. I'm not sure if the question was problems, but like difficulties in community spaces. Like attendance was also a thing. Like, I don't know. I feel like because we don't have, like, this is not our like biggest outlet of like community spaces, like sit down, chit chat, conversation, discussion. I think people are far more programmed to like go out clubbing and nightlife because that is what the queer community has built for itself massively and given. And so when you like put in front of some people, like, how about we just come like in the daytime to like, talk about not necessarily trauma, but like just talk through your shit. It's not people's first like I need to be there. It'll be far more like, oh, I need to be at the rave. And like, I have a lot of space and compassion for that because like language is difficult. Language which is designed not to include us, to communicate our feelings and thoughts through that is difficult. And it is far more easier to communicate whatever is going on through your body as it moves. But yeah, like attendance has been,
I think even on that point, it's like so many queer folks have understood the narrative of we're allowed to go out at night. Where, you know, we're the vampires of the night. Like,
I hate that.
No, of course.
Do you know, at work there, we had an issue with, we had basically the person who designs our wig is a white person. So we already have our backs up around like people touching our heads and all this stuff. And Jay, I won't say his name, one of the cast members who had gone to Black Pride, he had like long braids, looked amazing, but he had to like cut them. So he's got this white man cutting his hair, and the guy goes, oh, so where was Black Pride? How was it? He's like, oh yeah, it was at Olympic Park. Oh, so the blacks are taking over then. They're coming out of the woodworks.
Oh my God.
That just reminded me of that. So,
I think we're used to going out at night because it is safer, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I think it's almost like kind of what we're talking about, kind of like things are slowly shifting. And I do think things are more slowly shifting where, yes, you might get looked at, but like, I touch wood, I hope everyone's safe out there. But like, majority of the time, it's just going to be a look or stare, and like, we're not going to get attacked. And so we can like commune during the day.
Yeah.
We can come together during the day. We can have other kind of ways of being in community outside of drinking and partying. Mm-hmm. And not to say those things are not great, but to say that like, there's other forms of being in community with each other, which I think it's hard to like remind people that these spaces exist and these spaces are here for you.
And what has been some of the positive impact that that has had on your specific platform that people engage with that?
Well, in Dope Black Careers and the events that we've done.
I mean, I love it.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't. It's one of those I haven't quite found the words to describe. But like, the biggest euphoria I may have ever experienced is during the events when everyone is just in the midst of discussion and like unpacking, and everyone's having that wow. And I'm just like, you just look around and all these black faces, and everyone is just, I don't know. They came for the talk, but they left with like community and people.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, like, community spaces have been my biggest like lesson and biggest biggest changer for my life. And so to see that through Dope Black Queers as well is a feeling I still obviously don't quite know how to put into words, but yeah, it's really fulfilling.
I would also say, like, thank you, Ed, for shifting also how we did Dope Black Queers, because initially it was like panel and people listened. Mm. And then you were like, oh, let's shift it to we just all sit around and talk.
Yeah.
And like, yes, we kind of facilitate that, but we're not like the head speakers. Mm-hmm. And I think that really like was able to show not just me, but I feel like everyone in that space that like, this is not a space of like hierarchies. This is a space of like communing with each other and talking and like, yeah, letting joy, trauma, bullshit, talking about what crazy whites, crazy cishets, like letting it all out, you know? And I think because of that, almost this shifting of also like, how do you create those spaces? It's like, it's not just like you just create it, but it's also like even how the talking was. And I think that is a big shift that I've never really thought about when I've seen like a space that is for black queer
folk.
Because
it's decolonial,
you know,
because it's not normal, it's not what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
No community does that.
Yeah,
because you're not supposed to sit down and talk about your feelings. What?
Yeah.
You can't even speak to your family members about your feelings, much less a group of people that you don't know. And it's so interesting that like, historically, this is how we, in like African culture, this is what we do. And also, I love the element of like joy and celebration that comes with it. I feel like sometimes the removal of like of these conversations or these forums or these spaces or where you can actually hear and figure things out, it's almost like when you remove that from the partying or the partying, it almost replicates what white people do. You know, they work from Monday to Friday. And so on Friday, I'm going to get drunk.
Oh, they love a pub culture.
Yeah. Friday, we're going to get rat ass, and then we're going to start again. And I guess that what you all are doing with Dope Black Queers is inviting life and community to the partying, so then it doesn't become like a toxic thing of, oh, I'm just gonna dance this out because I know that next week I'm gonna have to deal with XYZ or the racism or the misogynoir or all of these other things.
Because sometimes dancing it out isn't the only answer.
No.
Or sometimes it can be, you know, dancing or drinking can lead to just someone becoming alcoholic or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh no, you need more. And I don't think we've had to interact with that per se, but I think we could possibly be a space where that more is just having those conversations and be like, oh wow, I might need to go to therapy. And I think just that itself is like, I think, I'm not saying we're doing that per se, but like it could definitely be a space where people come because it's like they need more, as you said, than just the club.
Yeah.
More than skinning out.
And as well, you know, like we need, everything's like a multi-pronged like approach. Like there is many ways to skin a cat. Sure, we're going with that analogy.
I love it.
But like to heal ourselves against all of the bullshit and violence that we have experienced and currently experiencing, dancing is a tool for that, but also conversation and community has to be a tool for that, because like you have to root it in.
It's balance.
Like,
yeah. Okay. I'm going to wrap this up. But before we do, Chloe, will you drop us a track, please? It feels so weird saying your name because my sister's name is Chloe. Hey. So it's like every time you say it, I think of my sister.
My track. Oh, I think I'll just go for my classic that I love dearly. Would be Aaliyah.
Shut your mouth. Girl, you don't know me like this. I could have gone different.
It would be Aaliyah.
Come on now.
It's going to be one in a million.
Okay. Here we go. Aaliyah, one in a million. See you in a minute. I should really do like radio host it. I really want to do that
with
one
you.
Day. Wait for it. And that was Aaliyah, one in a million.
Not that then. I was like,
no.
Oh, guys, I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. I was just saying to Aiden and Chloe that I'm going to sleep really well tonight because this conversation has been really full and really has fed me. So thank you guys for coming out and for sharing so brilliantly and eloquently your experiences, your understandings, the information that you know. Man.
Thank you for having
y'all
us on.
Y'all are great.
Thank you for having us.
Y'all are great. Your questions are great. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
And like, you can be invited to come on a podcast and be asked questions and you don't feel comfortable giving the answers and going there. But this is what you've created with the Palace of the Dogs and Barking. It feels like home, you know?
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very, very much. It's been a privilege having you on the show. Have you guys got any thoughts or anything that you'd like to leave with any Black queer person listening to the podcast today?
Don't look at me like that.
You sound like you were going to go.
Maybe I was just telling my team. Anyway.
I would say like this is gonna sound so corny, but generally like I'm not an old girl, but I've been in this shit for a while, and I would definitely say truly being your authentic self will be so much richer for your life. Like, we don't know what's after. And we know what our bodies are spiritually and physically right now. And so to be your most authentic self as a Black queer person, honestly, you may have difficulties if it's shifting, whatever, or it may be a smooth smooth ride. But overall, when you get out of that like rigidness, that cage, ooh, baby, this is a black trans woman talking, where my black Nigerian mother is calling me daughter, is referencing me, she, her, like full Christian woman. She still goes to church. Trust me. And I'm not saying it's going to be always going to be this easy, but and just find your community as well. Because being, again, corny as hell, being your most authentic self, like, wow, like this society is just trying to make us caged and not do that. But truly, 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 like, I don't know how to describe it more, but like, I'm so happy. I'm so lucky.
Thank you.
I think I should have gone first. I don't think I can follow that. But I mean, I second that in totality, because yeah, once you get to that place, it's only up. And like up in, as you like traverse mountains and there's the highs and lows, but as you step into yourself, there's just like a no going back thing. What else would I add? I mean, I know with the like queers and the forum events that we do, structured in that way because I want people to know that like their thoughts, opinions and being is just as valid as anyone else's, and like no one person is greater than you or more meaningful. And so that's what I'd echo here, is that you are a whole and full individual who's just as important as anybody with or without a platform, fame, notoriety. You're the greatest thing the world's ever created.
And I would no, I would just say to remember to feel, be present. We're in a world or in a society where you're continuously being told not to feel things. You can see people who look like you being murdered and just atrocities happening to people who look like you, and we're continuously told to not feel that. So feel everything in your process and hold space for that, because it will, yeah, make you feel more connected, fuller. Yeah, that's what I'd say. Where can we find you all?
I'm gonna go for yourself.
Anyway.
Every single time Chloe's like
it's because they're like coming for me. They'd be like looking at me like I'm not meant to be the spokesperson.
So you can find Dope Black Queers on all socials, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, as it's written, Dope Black Queers. We run monthly events at the London LGBTQ plus community centre by London Bridge station. So yeah, find us on socials, and yeah, we have a monthly forum event, which is a discussion space where there's a topic and we all just come, convene, discuss, know each other, leave with more than we came is the goal.
When's the next one?
The next one is, oh no, the next one is the end of what month are we in? October.
Okay.
At some point. And yeah, we're usually towards the end of the month.
Awesome. I'm coming.
Yeah.
amazing. My Instagram, for me, Chloe, it would be 1.Chloe with a C dot F. You can follow me there for, you know, cute shit, poetry stuff, art stuff, my face. Yeah.
Have you got any events that you're showing any work at or performing?
When's this coming out?
Well, it depends, because I just put them out sporadically at this point.
Well, I think just follow me on Instagram. You'll see much stuff there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you again for coming. I feel so honored to have you on the podcast. And yeah, all you lot listening, you lot are getting a real thing, so don't try it. Make sure you rate and review.
right? Mm-hmm. On Spotify and Apple Podcasts or wherever you stream. This is Danny Bailey from the Palace of the Dogs, and this has been Barking. Bye.
Thanks. The Palace of the Dogs. The Palace of the Dogs.